All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. Our first case this morning, 2023-0255, in the matter of the Sherwin-Williams Company versus certain underwriters at Lloyd's London et al. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Hacker, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, John Hacker, one of the counsel arguing for the insurers this morning. I'll be addressing two of the questions presented. The first, whether Sherwin's liability was imposed because of or for bodily injury or property damage, the acuity issue, and the second, whether the abatement remedy was imposed as damages. My colleague, Mr. Kravitz, will address the question whether Sherwin expected or intended the harm to occur. So starting with the acuity issue.
And how are you dividing your time?
I'm sorry. I'll be taking 9 minutes total, 7 minutes hopefully at the opening portion, and 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Kravitz will take 6 minutes total.
Okay, thank you.
So starting with the acuity issue, as your honors are very well aware, under that decision, liability for public nuisance is not imposed because of bodily injury or property damage under Ohio law, merely because the nuisance, the public nuisance itself, arises from health or property harms in the community. And it's not just acuity. That decision is joined by Rite Aid, by Quest, by Bluebell, and others, all of which agree that liability is imposed because of property damage or bodily injury only when establishing the liability required proof that the defendant caused particular injury to a particular person. So if the injury was suffered by a third party, then the plaintiff must effectively be standing in the shoes of that particular injured third party, asserting essentially the same claim that person herself would have had. As in acuity, the counties here did not stand in the shoes of particular injured individuals and assert their bodily injury or property claims. They instead, as in acuity, alleged a purely collective harm in the form of a public nuisance. In acuity, it was the widespread presence of opioids in the community. In this case, it was the widespread presence of interior lead paint in the community. Now, Sherwin says, despite all that, acuity does not apply and does not control for basically two reasons. Their principal argument is that here there are specific property owners who were among, quote, the people represented by the counties and who own specific properties that might end up being remediated. But that's no distinction at all, Your Honors. In fact, just as in acuity, the counties here sued in public nuisance only on behalf of the community writ large. In acuity, this court explicitly recognized that the nuisance there was a public health crisis that, quote, necessarily relates to bodily injuries, but there was no bodily injury coverage because the governments were not standing in the shoes of particular injured persons to assert their specific bodily injury claims. Now, this case, in fact, is even easier than acuity on this key point because it's discussed at page 313 of Santa Clara 1. The governments here, the counties, tried to assert a class action on behalf of third parties seeking recovery for alleged damage to their specific properties, but the courts, Your Honors, rejected that claim. And why did they reject it? Precisely because it alleged, and tried to allege, that lead paint products damaged specific properties, which the court said would be a product liability claim. The governance would be tantamount to a product liability claim the counties were not allowed to assert on behalf of others. The representative public nuisance claim the counties did assert, by contrast, was allowed to proceed only because it did not require proof of damage at any specific properties anywhere.
Does it? Are we bound by how the California court characterized the remedy?
Yes, Your Honor, under a couple of principles. The most compelling one and decisive one is that in an indemnification action, you look to the basis for liability that's being indemnified, right? So you don't look to the label, I accept that, but you look to the substance of what the liability was trying to establish and what the remedy was
Isn't part of the substance here that there's going to be remediation of specific homes because these homes have suffered property damage because of the existence of lead paint?
So the answer is no, Your Honor, for at least two reasons. First of all, the remedy doesn't actually change anything. You look to the liability under the language of the policies and the principles of insurance coverage. You're trying to figure out what the liability was imposed for or because of. But even if you look at it from the perspective of remedy, and this relates to the problem that liability here was not established with respect to any specific properties, the remedy here is never going to involve any homeowner establishing that he or she or they suffered property damage at their property. There's just an assumption on Sherwin's part that any property out there with lead paint on it must have suffered property
damage. First, is the presence of lead paint, is that property damage? Because that's, at least in one of the opinions, that's what the court seemed to say, not deterioration, the actual presence of lead paint.
And that's precisely the problem. The mere presence doesn't ipso facto establish property damage. To establish a property damage claim, a homeowner would have to show that they didn't, when they purchased the property.
But there is a line in the California opinion that says, somewhere, that says that the presence of lead paint is property damage. Right?
I don't think so. I would have to look and see. The court actually said the opposite, I know, in saying that it wasn't property damage to simply seek the costs of removing the paint, that's not property damage in disguise. That's
then,
the reason the public
uses. What does remediation include?
I'm sorry?
What does remediation include?
So the remedy here isn't just remediation. The remedy is payment.
I'm asking remediation specifically.
Right. It includes education to educate the public about which homes, whether they should be allowed to let the government in, let the contractors in to encapsulate the paint, to remove the paint, that
okay,
kind of thing.
Okay, so encapsulate and remove.
That's part of it,
doesn't that
yes.
cost money?
That does cost money, yes.
Isn't that damage?
No, and that's a problem. Certainly not under the meaning of acuity, because no homeowner would be able to establish, or a homeowner in order to establish that's damage, that they lost money because of a reduced property value, there's a big problem they have. For example, it's required that homeowners, that when you purchase an old home, there's a lead paint disclosure. So most purchasers would know that there was lead paint in their homes. The property value already reflects the existence of lead paint, so an individual homeowner would have a very difficult time.
But that's the expectation damage. I'm talking about the reliance damages of removing the lead paint or encapsulating it.
I don't think a homeowner would have, again, this is part of the problem here, but a homeowner, I think, would have a very difficult time establishing a property damage claim when their value of the property already reflects the existence of lead paint. There's no property damage. There's no damage to claim. There's no loss. So the case would be
there's
dismissed.
There's no expectation loss. I agree with that.
But there's also no value. There's no out-of-pocket loss. They paid a certain amount that necessarily reflects the existence of. But here's the critical point, Your Honors. This is exactly the exchange an individual homeowner and Sherwin-Williams would have in a homeowner case if somebody said, I want property damage. I'm suing you, Sherwin-Williams, for property damage because there's lead paint in my homes. This is the kind of thing that would be litigated. Courts would, address it. There'd be discovery on the question about who knew what, when. None of that was proved, not only to establish liability, which we think is the essential critical point, but even at the remedy stage, that will never be proved either. Nobody cares.
But we're talking about specific property damage done to specific individuals when it comes to damages. Now, does it make any difference in the Santa Clara action that there was targeting for relief, which were children who had elevated blood levels or where there existed excessive lead dust, and homes that were built before 1951 if they were located in specific jurisdictions? How do you argue that away?
Right, so two points. The first one I already was mentioning earlier, which is you have to look at the basis for liability. None of that was proved in establishing the liability to pay out a certain amount. And the amount was just based on estimates, based on the number of units that are out there, right? Nobody knew at any one of those units, whether there's any lead paint on them. None of them, because it wasn't relevant to the case. It was
so
just
you're
an estimate.
Liability would have to be property damage and a showing of some health problems due to lead paint that Sherwin-Williams paint. You're saying there'd have to be someone who had actual property damage and or harm, personal injury or harm.
I think it would be or. If they're trying to establish that it's because of a bodily injury, you would have to show who was bodily injured, how, you know, was it attributable to the lead paint, all of that. And that certainly has nothing to do whatsoever, even with the remedy.
So,
only issue is property damage, and to that, right, it's not relevant to liability, but even on remedy, you're not talking about establishing property damage at specific properties. You're just going in and removing paint wherever you find it.
So if this would have been a class action, we'd be talking about something different. But because it was a nuisance action, for damages?
I couldn't agree more. If this had been a properly certified class action for product defect, right, defective lead paint is on the walls, and a class action of purchasers of the lead paint or users of the lead paint sue, they get a class action certified, and liability is imposed against Sherwin-Williams because they sold a defective product that injured people, and the judgment was, you know, everybody's property was reduced by X amount, that would be a very different case, right? That's what they're trying to turn this case into, a de facto class action for product defect, and that is precisely, I mean, I cannot emphasize more, that is precisely what this case is not, because it's the only reason the case was allowed to go forward was that both Santa Clara courts said, you, Sherwin-Williams, are misunderstanding the basis for liability in this case. You're not being asked to be held liable. They're not trying to hold you liable for selling a defective product that injured individual homes. You're being held liable for advertisements that promoted the widespread use of this harmful product in the community, just like the pharmaceutical manufacturers in Acuity were seeking to be held liable for promoting the use of a product that caused harm to the community. That's what the harm is. It's a community-wide harm to the general public welfare. Nobody has ever established specific property damage, a claim or liability for property damage at a specific property, and critically, nobody ever will establish that. If I could just say one word about the as damages issue, and that is that, and we've already sort of touched on this, but all agree, there's no question of ambiguity here. The issue is whether a remedy is damages only if it provides compensation for loss or injury. The remedy here does not compensate for anybody's loss. It doesn't compensate for the government's loss. If it did try to compensate for the government's loss, it couldn't work because in California, the governments are prohibited from getting reimbursement for their own costs. And for the reasons I've already discussed,
That sounds an awful lot like environmental claims.
Where
they're not always specific to someone's loss, right?
Well, two points on that.
I mean they're back to your point about it may already be reflected in the property value. It may be reflecting the value of the property. It's not, there may not be a loss, but there's still a responsibility to clean it up that insurance companies have been found to pay.
So 2 points on that. First of all, it almost always does, as far as I know, it always does involve specific property. You're cleaning up, and the liability is for, you know, invasive hazardous waste on a specific property. That's what
I answered the damages point that you were making.
Right, and then to the more specifically to the damages point, in the CERCLA and analogous state cases, the government has a right to go in and just remediate and then get reimbursement for it, right, for its costs. That's exactly what the California governments cannot do under Section 731. As both courts in this case said, in the Santa Clara cases said, and the San Luis Obispo court said, the government cannot, under Section 731, obtain reimbursement for its own costs of exercising its
police power.
They're
getting their future costs, which just happens in the pollution context.
Right, but it's the same point. Even if they had any authority to do it in the future, which they don't, right? Unlike in the CERCLA cases, they're not going to, in the future, spend the money to remediate at private homes because they don't have that power. But even if they did, they couldn't get reimbursement for it under California law. This has never been about reimbursement.
They're getting paid in advance to do that, right?
I mean,
they're getting the money first, not getting reimbursed, but they're getting this fund, and then they're going to use it to do that.
Right, I'm saying they couldn't get reimbursed in the future. This can't be understood as advance reimbursement for costs they could otherwise incur because they have no power to incur those costs. And if they tried to spend it, they couldn't go seek a remedy for advance reimbursement, you know, a later remedy for reimbursement, because that's prohibited under California law. And that's what the Santa Clara courts said in telling Sherwin at the time, you're misunderstanding this case. It's not a thinly disguised damages award, not as a matter of label, because the governments are not entitled to reimbursement for costs that they incur in executing their government functions.
You've used all your time and you're well into Mr.
Kravitz.
Kravitz, time.
Thank you,
Kravitz. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Carl Kravitz. I'm going to address the expected or intended issue, the language that is in the policy, the policies. I'll start with the fact that the parties do agree on what the legal test is, that Sherwin expected the harm, and there would be no coverage if it was substantially certain that the harm would result from its conduct. And what Sherwin actually knew subjectively about the harms and hazards of interior residential lead paint when it promoted that use, that was litigated and finally determined in the Santa Clara action after a weeks-long trial and an appeal. Santa Clara, too, confirmed that Sherwin knew by 1900 that lead was a deadly cumulative poison. And Sherwin, it confirmed also that Sherwin was held liable for promotion of lead paint, for interior residential use of lead paint, knowing of the public health hazard that such use would create. This Sherwin has denied that these findings exist, but in Santa Clara 2, also confirmed that the trial court expressly found that, and I'm quoting now, lower level lead exposure harm children, lead paint used on the interiors of homes would deteriorate, and lead dust resulting from this deterioration would poison children and cause serious injury.
How is this different than, the court essentially found that Sherwin Williams knew it was poisonous and that some people, it was substantially certain that some people would get sick because of this and die because of this. But I mean, doesn't that happen all the time in products liability context and insurance? I mean, for example, a trampoline manufacturer. Now, one trampoline may not be substantially certain to kill someone, but if you manufacture a million trampolines, you know that people are going to die. But you would never say that you don't have insurance coverage for that because they knew that there was a certain number of people that injuries were going to result.
Your Honor, I think that the critical difference here is explained in Santa Clara 1 and Santa Clara 2. You're talking about a product where the manufacturer or producer knows that the product has risks, and you've described some of them with a trampoline. Or with a car, for example, you know that someone can get distracted, someone might be texting, and there might be an accident. That's general knowledge that the product comes with risks. Representative public nuisance is different. And it's different in the following sense, that it requires promotion of a known hazardous or dangerous use. So in other words, the manufacturer's instructing a particular use, in this case, use in homes, and does so with actual knowledge that that use will inevitably lead to certain harms. As Your Honor said, people in the community will get sick, poisoned, and even killed from this. And that is the critical difference, because we're talking about a specific dangerous use with actual knowledge that that use will inevitably lead to the harms that, in this case, was found to be a public nuisance. And that is the...
But a lot of people won't get sick, right? A lot of people will repaint every year. They won't die. They won't get sick. Same with a lot of people use trampolines safely. I'm not quite sure I understand the difference.
Well, the difference is if you generally know a trampoline, someone could fall off it, or a number of things could happen. But if you told the manufacturer, told the consumer, take the trampoline and put it next to the edge of a cliff, okay? You know that that is a dangerous or hazardous use that would inevitably lead to more harms or specific harms, and that's what we have here. Okay, we know with lead paint that there were risks, and there were known risks, but we know that when lead paint was used in homes, which is the specific construction that we're talking about here, that it would inevitably lead to a public health hazard with devastating effects on kids. Now, Your Honor is correct that not every kid in the communities was going to be harmed. I think that's true. But we're talking about a community harm here, which is an interference with a public right. And in this case, it was inevitable, and Sherwin knew with certainty that there would be harms in this community. Kids would be poisoned, kids would be harmed, and kids would be killed at high exposure levels. And so when we focus on that, this case is a case where they knew, they picked out a specific use that, by the way, they knew all during the time that they were promoting this dangerous, hazardous use. And they knew that it would inevitably poison and harm and kill kids. And yet they sold it anyway and promoted that use. And they expected the harm that occurred. And for that reason, Your Honor, I don't believe that there can possibly be coverage under these policies that only grant coverage for harms that are neither expected nor intended.
So you're saying this was not an accidental risk and that Sherwin-Williams should not expect to be insured for something that they did intentionally, because creating a nuisance here was not an accidental risk?
Absolutely. This was not an accident. And I'll just refer to the ConAgra case, which applied the same standard that applies here with substantial certainty and the same facts as to a co-defendant. And the court said, with respect to these findings, interior residential lead paint that is in a dangerous condition does not merely pose a risk of private harms in private residences. The community has a collective social interest. These findings conclusively established by Santa Clara II cannot be reconciled with any conclusion other than ConAgra, the co-defendant, knew or believed its conduct was substantially certain or highly likely to result in the conditions found in this case to be a public nuisance. And that's the essence of this case, which is they instructed a dangerous use that they knew was dangerous and that would inevitably result in the harm that was found to be a public nuisance here. And they don't even try, by the way, to explain how it is that they could have known that the paint would deteriorate. It was a deadly cumulative poison, and the resulting dust would harm, poison, and kill kids. They don't say how, if those are the findings, that they didn't expect the harm. They don't even make that argument. What they say is that they can avoid them because they were held liable for knowing only that there was a risk. And, Your Honors, I think Santa Clara I and Santa Clara II are clear that that was not the basis of the decision.
Thank you. Mr. DeJoyles, good morning.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. Leon DeJulius of Jones Day on behalf of the appellee, the Sherwin-Williams Company. I want to be clear about what the insurers are actually asking for in this case. This is not about an application of an acuity. Acuity was based on longstanding Ohio contract principles. The insurers are asking for a blanket rule that would bar coverage for all public nuisance actions, notwithstanding the language of the policies, notwithstanding the type of public nuisance that was brought. There's no basis under Ohio law to do that. If the insurers wanted an exclusion They should have negotiated for one. And in fact, there are policies in which insurers have negotiated a lead paint exclusion.
But counsel, doesn't this come down to the definition of damages and contractually what that means to, for in the policy?
That is one of the arguments, Your Honor. But there are damages here. And if you look at the Stechno case, when you remediate damage to a property, that in and of itself is damages. You've got to interpret this against the insurer. And so the question is whether a reasonable businessman would believe that paying money to remediate property damage, well, lead paint, lead hazards.
Is what the contract says, not what someone would believe?
Well, that's fair, Your Honor. It is what the contract says, but it is interpreted from the perspective of a reasonable businessman. And you interpret it against the insurer. And for the insurers to prevail.
It's not like Sherwin-Williams is not a sophisticated consumer here.
That's not the test, Your Honor. The test is a reasonable businessman. Plain language, ordinary language, construed against the insurer. The insurer has to demonstrate that it is unreasonable.
Well,
unreasonable.
We only get to the construe against the insurer part if we find that there's some ambiguity, right?
That's also fair, Your Honor. But what we're talking about in the Stechno case, what Stechno holds, is when you have damage to a property, remediating that property is damage.
What about the fact that not all this fund even goes to remediating property? Some of it goes to advertising, some of it goes to public awareness, it goes to all kinds of things.
That would be a question for allocation on remand. But remember, the case, the nuisance here, the damages were calculated based on a per house basis. This isn't like Acuity, which was to recoup the government entity's emergency funds. This was brought on behalf of the people. And I heard today and I saw in the reply brief that the court in Santa Clara 1 dismissed the representative case. That is absolutely incorrect. And I point this court to page 299 and to page 313 of Santa Clara 1. And it makes absolutely clear that this is a representative public nuisance brought on behalf of the people, and that the claim dismissed on 299 and 313 is a class action brought on behalf of municipal governments. Municipal government class action to recover their economic damages. The claim that was dismissed in Santa Clara was the Acuity claim. The claim that prevailed, the one that went to trial, was a representative public nuisance, and it was brought on behalf of the people to recover for the people. And the recovery was specifically the remediation of individual properties. Now, yes, it's true, we didn't get into which properties have lead hazards, which ones actually have to be remediated.
So your theory is that on remand, that there would be some giving up of this amount and figure out what actually goes to property damage and what actually goes to other things in the funds?
Well, remember, Your Honor, the judgment was for $406 million. The settlement was for $305 million. So there was $101 million that wasn't part of any settlement. So there will be an allocation proceeding. But our position in Santa Clara and our position now is that the calculation, the only purpose that money could be spent was to remediate a home. And that's true, because that's not
what the order says, right? It says, outreach and education to homeowners, train individuals to inspect homes, et cetera. I mean, that's not all for remediation.
That is true, Your Honor, but it also says that any money not spent to remediate a home would be returned to the defendants in that case. And that, remember, this was a fund.
But you can't return money for educational purposes and informational if money is spent that way. I mean, it seems to say two things. You're saying any money not spent goes back, but money spent for education and information and, you know, disseminating information, et cetera, that will be spent. That's not remediation. How can that go back?
Yeah, I think, Your Honor, there's some ambiguity, but the point being is that this would be questions that would be resolved on a remand as to what the remedy actually would have looked like, whether the settlement itself was reasonable to compensate for the property damage. And that happens all the time in insurance cases.
Let me shift your gears a little bit. Is it relevant here that Sherwin-Williams knew of the risk imposed with paint that had lead, that contained lead?
It was relevant to the underlying verdict. It is not relevant to the issue here for expected or intended.
Why not? Why isn't it something
because, Your Honor,
expected
it,
or intended?
Expected or intended is a quintessential fact issue. And what the insurers are trying to do is circumvent that fact finding by pointing to Santa Clara and saying, there were facts over here. Look at those. Those are good enough.
Well, isn't it? And then, so you're saying this is why it should return that the Court of Appeals was correct, and why it should return for fact-finding at the trial court.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the Buckeye, this court's Buckeye decision makes clear to that. Just because there's factual findings that might appear to be relevant isn't enough. For due process, this court has to find that the identical issue was litigated and it was essential to the judgment in Santa Clara. And Santa Clara does not address expected or intended. It talks about knowledge of risks. And it certainly wasn't essential to judgment. It was whether there was knowledge of a hazard to be created. That's not expected or intended, and that's a fact issue to which Sherwin-Williams is entitled to present evidence and entitled to make its case.
Okay, so this was decided in the trial court here in Ohio on summary judgment. And the trial court found, and I don't think that the Court of Appeals said that it's fact-finding was faulty, but it found that Sherwin-Williams not only used the lead pigments, but it manufactured them in the 20th century. And so it was aware in the early 20th century that this was dangerous, yet it's not like it got the pigments from someone else and then found out, oh, this could be a problem. It actually manufactured them. And so how can Sherwin-Williams, being integrally involved in that process from start to finish, including the knowledge, expect that an insurance company would cover that because it wasn't accidental?
Well, Your Honor, there's never been a finding that Sherwin-Williams expected or intended to harm anybody. And every product manufacturer knows of risks. Trampolines, skateboards, ladders, BB guns, firearms. When manufacturers make products, they know that people will be injured. With absolute certainty, the manufacturer knows someone will be hurt using the ladder. They know that. That doesn't mean there aren't accidents. It doesn't mean that there aren't hazards that happen from the properties. People live with lead paint safely every day. It is not illegal to have lead paint in your house. It's perfectly safe. What happens is when people misuse the product, when they let the lead paint deteriorate, they don't take care of the properties, then it creates a hazardous condition. That is not expected or intended. And Sherwin-Williams is entitled to have a fact finder. The quintessential fact issue determined whether expected or intended, not because there was some findings of knowledge from the early 20th century.
How is that insurable?
How is it insurable? Because that's how every product is insurable. That is what manufacturers know. Manufacturers make products. They know that there are risks. Risk is not an uninsurable proposition. This court has held that recklessness is not sufficient. It's just like when you put a target deer on a road. That's not expecting or intended an injury. It's certainly creating a risk, certainly creating a hazard. Shooting a BB gun like Swanson towards people creates a risk. It's a hazard. It doesn't mean expected or intended. And that's the key point here, is that for the insurers to prevail, you have to find that the Santa Clara court found expected or intended. Now, your argument's a great one, perhaps, on remand, and the insurers are welcome to make that, but
mine's a question. Mine's not an argument. That's your job.
My apologies. But the insurers undoubtedly will make that argument on remand, and they're entitled to, but that doesn't mean that Santa Clara short-circuits that. that there was a finding of expected or intended. Those words are not in that opinion. It didn't happen. I'd like to go back to acuity, because I want to make absolutely clear what this public nuisance was about. This is not like acuity that was brought on behalf of governments to recognize their own economic losses. This was brought on behalf of the people to recover for the people. And in that case, in this case in Santa Clara, the RASCL database was introduced. The RASCL database is the database that includes all of the lead poisoned children in the municipal areas. That was the evidence that determined, was there a harm? Was there a bodily injury?
But those aren't the people being compensated, right?
Well, that's not true, Your Honor, because when you look at the amended statement of decision, the people whose properties will be remediated start with the properties where there are lead poisoned children in the RASCL database. It is tied directly towards the bodily injury. But it's also property. It's also property damage. And the underlying case had specific properties. It was calculated on a per property basis. And we objected. I was in the trial court in California, and I objected, and I said, I want more information on these houses. And the Court of Appeals in Santa Clara II said, wait until the damages provision. You can seek discovery on each individual house. You can seek discovery on the owner. You can determine causation issues. You can determine whether your paint was there. That's all for a later date. But that was to be done on a property by property basis. And the fact that we have settled prior to that determination doesn't mean it didn't exist. The amended statement of decision, Santa Clara II, sets forth that's what the process was to be. And I heard my colleagues say, you look at the liability, not the damages. That's simply not accurate if you read the policies. And if you read the policies, they say that all sums, and again, this is broad language, unlike acuity, this is broad language, all sums that the insured shall be obligated to pay by reason of the liability, and then they stop, imposed by law. That means I can't just offer somebody money without a legal ruling and expect to be reimbursed for damages on account of bodily injury or personal or property damage. It's for damages because of bodily injury or property damage. And here you have property damage, clear property damage to pre-1951 homes. You have a decision based on bodily injury, the RASCL database, specific homes, pre-1951s. You have actual loss in use and property damage to those homes, those addresses, and remediating property damage is damage. That is sufficient for coverage in this case. It should go back down. It should be remanded for further fact development. There's no further questions, Your Honor. Happy to sit down.
Thank you. Mr. Hacker, you've used your time. I'll give you a minute.
Counsel, I want to go back to a question over here I don't think was answered. If someone is to encapsulate or to remove the lead paint, who pays for that?
That comes out, the state pays for it. It comes out of a fund.
But who ultimately pays for it?
Well, the state ultimately pays.
So they never pay a nickel of that?
They put money into a fund,
right,
that will be tapped.
The to state help pay for that.
Right.
So isn't that damage?
No, because it's not damage because nobody's lost anything. Damage is a compensation for loss.
They've
Everybody
lost
agrees
something.
On that.
They've lost money.
Yeah, but the question is whether they're paying. It's not their loss. The damage has to be the plaintiff's loss.
Yes.
Right? The plaintiffs here are the counties. The counties aren't getting paid anything. The state, they don't even receive the funds. The state gets the funds. The counties get zero. Right? The counties can only apply for funds from the state.
But how's that not damage? If ultimately the money comes from them.
Because the issue in an insurance case isn't whether
I understand insurance cases.
Right. And so the issue is not whether they were the issue is whether liability was imposed on
Correct.
Them for damage to the plaintiff.
Right.
Right? And the plaintiffs here didn't suffer any damage. The homeowners didn't suffer any damage. The counties didn't suffer any damage.
So there's no damage.
Right. There's no damages.
So there's no loss or property damage, right?
Right. There's no property damage.
So there's no claim against Sherwin-Williams.
There's a claim for abatement, right? There's a claim just like
that's
an acuity.
That's what I'm getting to. The cost of abatement, the cost of remediation, ultimately comes out of them.
That's right, but it's completely accepted that just paying money isn't damages. That's why it's critical to look at the policy and what it says liability, not just damage,
right.
Liability imposed as damages. Otherwise, if they paid a fine, that would be damages.
I get that.
And if they paid to build, scrubbers for, future, that's money. The fact that they have to pay money doesn't get you there.
But the money to pay the guy to scrape off the lead paint or to encapsulate it, which is another thing, ultimately is coming out of their pocket.
That's where it starts. They pay the state. They give money to the state that will be used to fund those contractors.
But to do that encapsulation.
Right. But it's not. But the plaintiffs here aren't getting any money for any kind of loss or detriment. That's why there's no coverage. For the as damages point.
And we don't know any specific damages of individuals who will receive the money, correct?
That's correct, as acuity requires. There has to be, liability has to be established based on specific damage to specific persons for specific injuries. And none of that is known. And no property damage will ever be established here because that's not an issue. Nobody's ever going to find out whether these owners, knew about the lead paint on their properties when they purchased them, whether their property values declined as a result, whether they suffered any loss of use. Nobody's ever going to ask that question.
Or when they rented them out.
Whether they rented them out, whether they were responsible, whether there were landlords in large buildings who were negligent. I just heard my colleague say that lead paint itself isn't property damage, just the fact that it's there. Right? That's his argument. Right? It depends a lot on what's happened with it, who did what to it. That's all the kinds of things that would get litigated in a real property damage case, but this isn't a property damage case, so nobody knows and never will know any of those facts because they're not relevant, because the only thing that is relevant is removing the community-wide harm, which is the fact of lead paint out there wherever it is, whether it's creating damage or not. That's the problem, and that's what's being remediated.
He's arguing that, he argued that had this proceeded without a settlement, that this would have ended up with sort of a quasi damage award like would appear in a class action where there's been environmental damage. Does that make a difference?
So, no, because that's not correct. In a class action, you would establish all the claims.
I said like it.
It's a material difference. It's not just label. In a class action, you would have actual proven. Everybody who could claim would prove that they are in the category, that they didn't know about the lead paint, that they were not responsible for all the things that counsel says have to occur.
And
for
the
it to
court
be
would appoint a special master, and it would be overseeing all of that.
Zero of that has been done or ever will be done because it's not relevant. If I can just say one point about the question about whether the acuity claim was dismissed, that's just demonstrably incorrect. What was dismissed was a class action that was tantamount to a product liability claim. Yes, it was on behalf of other governments, but it didn't matter there because it was a claim about property damage. And the court said, you can't do that. All you can complain about, all you can get a remedy for is harm to the general public welfare. That's the only thing you can obtain in a class action. And that's the same claim that was asserted in acuity. It wasn't called representative, but the governments were asserting a functionally representative claim because they're governments, right? They were asserting a claim that on behalf of the entire citizenry, everybody is injured because of the existence of opioids. We don't have to, and we're not going to try to prove, right, that individuals suffered bodily injuries. The public nuisance arises from the fact we're just going to show in general, that it's harmful. And this court correctly said that's not liability or damages because of or for bodily injury. Because you have to, it's only for or because of bodily injury when the plaintiff is proving that the plaintiff herself was injured or she's standing in the shoes of somebody who's injured and she's asserting that claim and proving all of its elements. That's the heart of acuity, and that's exactly what's has never been proved here and will never be proved here. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement and you will receive a decision from the court.